with my team, we are doing fundamental research and also applied research in various topics that are around AI. We focus, for example, on understanding how to provide better privacy, security, fairness, better model utility, even sustainability of these AI models, and how they can be used inside systems, networks, and also from the users of our telco networks. And then on the other way around, we look into building systems and networks that are better suited for such AI models. Also nowadays, we have AI-based type of devices, we have applications, services, even the general web is becoming more and more AI-powered.
Welcome to the Regulating AI podcast. Join host Sanjay Puri as he explores the dynamic and developing world of artificial intelligence governance. Each episode features deep dives with global leaders at the forefront of regulating AI responsibly, tackling the challenges using AI can bring about head-on and enabling balance without hindering innovation.
Welcome to the Regulating AI podcast. Artificial intelligence, AI, stands at the forefront of technological evolution, with experts predicting that it could add trillions of dollars to our GDP, but it could also negatively impact our workforce and national security. So how do we regulate it without stifling innovation? Our podcast features insights from various perspectives. We've had industry leaders and CEOs, we've had government officials, and leaders of advocacy groups and civil organizations. Together, they address pivotal questions that are needed to attract and create practical legislation. I'm very excited to have Nicholas Cortellas with us today. Nicholas is the co-director of Telefonica Research and head of AI Systems Lab for Telefonica, a large global telecommunications company. Telefonica is based in Barcelona, Spain. I invited him on this show as it is very important to get different perspectives towards framing AI legislation. We also wanted to get a perspective from a telecommunications expert. Welcome, Nicholas. It's an absolute pleasure to have you on the Regulating AI podcast.
Thank you, Sanjay, for the invitation. It's a really pleasure to be in this podcast and talk about the regulation and AI. Maybe just a clarification, Telefonica is, well, it's a group of companies primarily based in US headquarters in Madrid. And our research team is based in Barcelona, Spain. Thanks.
Oh, yes. Thank you for correcting me for our audience. It's very important. So having said that, Nicholas, can you give us a little bit of an overview of your role as the head of AI research? And how is AI being utilized in the telecommunication industry? People think of AI in tech. They think of it in education, in space, cyber. Not much has been talked about in telecommunication, and that's why we were so excited to have you, Nicholas.
Yes, of course. With my team, we are doing fundamental research and also applied research in various topics that are around AI. We focus, for example, on understanding how to provide better privacy, security, fairness, better model utility, even sustainability of these AI models, and how they can be used inside systems, networks, and also from the users of our telco networks. And then on the other way around, we look into building systems and networks that are better suited for such AI models. Also nowadays, we have AI-based type of devices, we have applications, services, even the general web is becoming more and more AI-powered. And therefore, we're looking into building such systems that are better. From there on, we actually do a lot of work, a lot of research in how to democratize the deployment and the use of AI in different domains, not just in telco, to be honest. We look into building solutions that are AI-based and they are more inclusive and accessible, especially when you take into account the diversity, the heterogeneity that exists across different types of user devices, across the users for that matter, and across industry domains. Yeah, so we are looking at all these things and always with an eye on the telco world, on the telco domain, and how to drive innovation inside the company and beyond.
And you touched on a very important point, Nicholas, that in certain parts of the world, I would say in large parts of the world, the telco device or your phone is your primary computer in many ways, because people generally do not have access to desktops and they use this. So it becomes so very critical. So I think your role becomes very important, Nicholas.
So what I mentioned earlier has to do with what my team and I are looking into, how we study things. But then from the point of view of the telco industry, there are a lot of places where AI, the machine learning models, are being deployed. The very first one, I would say, or maybe two or three main areas, is the network optimization. A lot of AI algorithms are being used to optimize the network performance, to predict and prevent even network outages, allocate resources, and make sure that the demands are met. Another way that is being used, and Telefonica actually is one of the first to do that, has to do with the customer service. We have, in fact, deployed this AI-powered kind of chatbot called Aura, or Aura in English. And this is kind of like a virtual assistant that can help you receive a more personalized customer support and handles routine inquiries and streamline more the interactions that you can have with the service and make it faster and more efficient. And then, of course, it's not only Telefonica, also other providers are deploying this kind of chatbots. I hinted on that just earlier. There is this aspect of detecting where errors may happen or where failures may happen in the network. So there's a lot of predictive maintenance, a lot of analytics that are happening in the network to make sure that how your network is performing. Furthermore, and maybe we get some moment to discuss this later, there is a lot of AI models used for cybersecurity and cyber fraud detection. So this is something that we're also using as a, I would say, telco world. There are a lot of AI-based solutions that are being deployed to help both the company as well as the customers, as well as the users, because telcos support B2B and B2C type of solutions. And therefore, you want to make sure that you detect anomalous behaviors, that you can detect fraud that's happening, user authentication issues, and so on.
To summarize, Nicholas, it's being used in network optimization. It's being used in customer service through chat box. It's being also obviously being used in cybersecurity and a few other things. So for our listeners, it's very helpful to know that AI is actually present in so many aspects, in internal facing as well as external facing to the customer in the telecommunication industry. So that's very good to know. Nicholas, how do you view the current state of AI regulation globally, specifically if you have any references to telecommunication industry, because the EU AI Act has recently getting the political thumbs up to move forward?
Very good question. I will say that I'm not a lawyer, so I think from the technological point of view, but what I have seen in the last years is definitely a lot of effort by different companies and even industries, not just in the telco world, to find their way around AI. That being said, I do notice a lot of fragmentation, a lot of splitting between the different countries, different continents. The way that people look at the problem of AI and how to regulate it, I think it's been addressed in a different way. There are a lot of legislations, emerging legislation that is encouraging, in my opinion. You already mentioned one that I wanted to actually highlight. It seems to me it's at least the first one from the European Commission, but I think it's even the first one in the world that tries to put a structure around the concept of using AI systems and understanding the potential risks that they may come up with. I could even highlight the few. So we do have these unacceptable risk AI systems, which according to the regulation will be banned from use. A little bit less risky, which is the high risk AI systems, will need to be assessed before and during their market life cycle. They are not going to be given the green light and then they will forget that. The other one, which I think is people are more familiar with, which is the general purpose and generative AI. Probably everybody have played with the ChatGPT type of systems in the last. So we have all these type of services and solutions where transparency needs to be in place and what type of data are being used to train on, et cetera. And then the least, let's say, problematic category is if you're interacting with services or applications that are using internally some AI systems, this needs to be transparent to you. And also you need to be given the freedom to continue working with this specific service or stop using it for some matter. So this from the commission starts putting, as I said, some structure, it starts getting the discussion going in a concrete way. But beyond that, I see a lot of, the landscape is very dynamic. There's a lot of effort being done across the world for sure. We will probably need to have more work on industry standards and even the data that are being used. If it's going to be user data, how they're being used. The commission has voted since now 6-7 years, the GDPR. So this has again been kind of like a lighthouse for a lot of countries and continents. I think we start seeing some tools in place. It remains to be seen how we will see them being operated.
Nicholas, do you think more international coordination or cooperation is needed in terms of regulations? Is that what you're suggesting?
Yeah. And I think there are different standards, different groups, place that the industry has and participates in. But I think there is more effort that needs to be done there. I don't think it's enough. I think there is more to be done. And while the industry is learning what AI can do for the industry, we also need to start giving more input to the regulators on how to address this in such a way.
Talking about the Pandora box, Nicholas, what ethical considerations you think are important when you're implementing AI in telecommunications?
Yeah, I think the first part, and I mentioned that just now, has to do with the data. These models need a lot of data to be trained on. And if we start talking about ethical, let's say, use of these AI models in telecommunications, people, customers create a lot of data or share a lot of data and so on. We need to be careful how they are being used. So we need to respect the privacy of the users. We need to comply with data protection regulations and so on. Beyond that, there are some other aspects, such as, for example, transparency. We need to make sure that it is clear and obvious and explainable how the specific models are being trained. We need to promote the trust towards the models. Fairness is another issue. It's not enough to just make sure that you protect the data of the users or being transparent on how you train the model. Definitely need to make sure that the models that are being trained are fair. If there is no bias embedded in them, especially when it comes to factors that talk about protected or sensitive attributes like race, gender, socioeconomic status, and so on. Beyond that, there are some other aspects that I would say are good to mention, even if it's not in the first, let's say, priority or the first thought, such as security. So this kind of system should be protected so that we don't have attacks against them. I'm thinking of attacks that try to manipulate the AI system to provide answers or provide solutions that are, let's say, biasing against somebody or forbidding service to some region and so on. And then it comes things that will become more and more relevant given the climate crisis, such as the social impact, sustainability, how we train these models. You may have heard of numbers that these kind of systems need power of a small village to actually be trained. We have a lot of things to work on over here, and the ethical training and use of such systems, I think, is going to be important.
I think it's very helpful. You raised some excellent points in terms of ethics, transparency, security. Nicholas, does your company collaborate with other telco entities or organizations to establish some industry standards for AI implementation? Are there any standards in telecommunications for AI implementation right now?
As of now, I'm not aware of, but there are various industry working groups that Telefonica is part of. There are standardization bodies that Telefonica is part of. And there is a lot of effort being done to coordinate with our peers, understand what they think when it comes to this technology. But that being said, when you talk about the standardization bodies, the process is very slow. A standard may take 5 to 10 years to be developed. Before you get standards, I think we will see some regulations in place. That's my opinion. Maybe things will change because the technology is moving faster than before. And maybe we need to move faster as well when it comes to this synchronization and this effort for standardization, for example. But there is a lot of participation in these working groups. For example, there's the IEEE or the ETSI, these European standards panels. We participate in several of these working groups. And even if some of them are not AI focused, I think AI is always in the discussion. Beyond that, I would say that there is a lot of interaction and collaboration and even knowledge sharing with academia. Therefore, Telefonica is constantly, like my team and our Telefonica research team, there is a lot of interaction with academics. We're always at the forefront of research and understanding what are the problems that you may be facing when it comes to AI, when it comes to how to make it more safe, more robust attacks, and so on.
That's helpful. You talked about the democratization of AI. What steps is your company taking to make sure, Nicholas, that the benefits of AI in telecommunications are accessible to a large spectrum of users, not just to a limited few? Because the worry is, and especially that we have a digital divide, that now there should not be an AI divide happening like we have the digital divide.
Telefonica, so maybe I'll mention a couple of things. One is that Telefonica is committed to use AI systems with these 5 pillars in mind, and I would like to mention them for the audience. A very brief one is fair AI. AI applications need to be ensured that they avoid discriminatory impacts based on personal characteristics like race, religion, and gender. It needs to be transparent and sustainable. So these kind of systems must be explicit about the data usage and decision-making processes, provide clear explanations to the users. Then there is the aspect of, let's say, human-centric AI. And why is this important? AI should be serving a society, not the other way around. So it should be under human control, and we should be able to prioritize social benefits and respect human rights when we have these AI systems and the sustainability goals behind them. Beyond that, there is the concept of privacy and security, of course, and also partnerships with other third parties that they need to respect the same type of, let's say, pillars. Now, all this being said, in-house, when we work and build the kind of AI-powered solutions, we look into building a privacy by design, security by design, and nowadays, having some sort of accessibility by design type of services. Something that my team is doing in the research domain, we're actually investing a lot of time in what we call federated learning or distributed AI learning. This is a particular paradigm that allows the industry to train AI models on the user devices. In this way, you get a win situation where the users maintain their data. They do not lose the data to the cloud. You allow the users to get more privacy behind that. And at the same time, you do get a useful model to be deployed inside the service, the application, and so on. This, in fact, started from Google quite a few years ago, since 2016, but becoming more and more adopted across the various industries. Now, the tricky part here is that as soon as you start pushing the training of the model to the devices, you need to start thinking about heterogeneity of devices, the user location. Maybe they have different energy and network availabilities, the diversity of the data. Sometimes you have regions in the world or even in the same country that have different type of data distributions, for example. All these things may lead to models that are less fair, for example, or may lead to some biased solutions or some unsustainable solutions. We're doing a lot of work from the research point of view at the R&D level to come up with not only more fair and more private solutions on the AI training, but the fundamental point of how do you enable all these people, all these devices to train the models on their devices. And this comes to your question of the democratization. So how do you make sure that everybody is included?
No, that's very helpful. You explained about the pillars. I think that's a very important foundation that you have set apart. You mentioned one thing, so I wanted to follow up in terms of putting these models on the device itself, not on the cloud. So they must be pretty light models. Are they open source? Are you going towards open source? Because there's a big debate, at least in the United States, about open source, closed source. What does Telefonica's approach towards this?
Looking to make the most out of AI advancements and innovation? Visit regulatingai.org to learn more about how best to optimize the use and integration of AI, and sign up for the Regulating AI newsletter to keep up to date with the latest in AI governance and regulation.
So it depends on the type of task that you want the model to do. There are a lot of open source models that, in fact, you can build your models from or start the model from. Telefonica, it can use this kind of open source models, but at the same time, there are some proprietary kind of activities that may happen or specific functions that the application may use. That being said, it never stops being auditable. It never stops being fair and offering transparency to the user on how it's being trained or how it's being made more fair. You do have a point there that the models, we're not talking about the very large language models that you try to deploy on these devices. You are talking about something more compressed, something more light indeed. But there are a lot of methods that are coming up from research that would enable this tuning of these models. To be honest, this is actually orthogonal to the question if it is open sourced or not. I think what is important there is after you have a model, you may have to fine-tune it from an open source model. In the end, you end up with a model. The question there, is that model fair? Is that model sustainably trained? Is that model private from the point of view of the user? So regardless where you start from, you ended up at this model, you have to provide some guarantees to the user.
You answered the question on open source, closed source. That leads me to another one. People say AI will enable the barriers of language to be broken because, you know, now you can do instant translation. So that's one question, just briefly for you. Is that something? Because even in Europe, you have multiple languages. And is that something that you are working on in terms of instant language translation on the device?
Not something that we are working on personally. However, we have been doing some work on audio, text-to-speech, text-to-speech and speech-to-text type of formations, but there is already a lot of work done from academic partners and industry partners on that front. And it is true that the best models are English-based. When it comes to English language, I think it's the one that allows the best performance, but not only. There is also a lot of effort on the Spanish, for example, because of us being in the Spanish market heavily. And I'm hoping that CAPS AI and the machine learning type of models will allow or maybe accelerate the switching from this kind of like monolithic point of view, which is, okay, let's make English work first and then the rest. We're able to move faster into other languages as well. We have thousands of languages around the world, and definitely we will need to have that.
Yeah, because you raised a very important question, because the worry is it's all the languages are getting trained in English language and in many cases on American data on the web, while there's a whole world of history and languages that needs to be absorbed by this. Are you keeping that in mind when you are thinking about it?
Yeah. So some of the work we have been doing with my colleagues, for example, has to do with, first of all, understanding or capturing the type of bias or unfairness, let's say, that may be happening when you try to train a model across different languages. So I mentioned this example between Spanish and English, but then there's definitely a lot more work to be done there. We haven't looked into it that much. I'm sure some colleagues from academia are also working on this. I think the effort there will become a question of assessing, coming with the right metrics to assess the right performance across languages. One issue is that if it is, for example, textual type of documents, you may not have the same body of knowledge per language, reduces or potentially reduces the amount of the performance, the utility that you can achieve with the model. So you take the same model, and if you train it on different languages, if these languages are increasingly less used or less popular, then you will find less and less material. And this can become a problem when you train these kind of models. Of course, there are solutions even for that, at least on the research point of view. I'm aware of various solutions where you try to counteract the problem of lacking data by creating even what we call artificial data that are allowing the model to be trained better. And yeah, there are some solutions that you can help the model at least train better. There is other methods where you do what you call transfer learning. So you can start from one body of knowledge, and then you transfer this knowledge into, for example, another language or whatever. So that means that you don't start from scratch, right? And this model, this new model for the other language to perform better than the one that you would start from scratch. Conclusion, there is various methods that I'm sure that the people will be trying in the near future to make it better.
Yeah. And I think that's very important too. I think if you remove language barriers, a lot of socioeconomic issues will also go away. Nicholas, to shift to impact on jobs of AI, with the integration of AI in telco, in telecommunications, there are a lot of concerns about job displacement when you talk about customer service or other stuff that you've just talked about. What are your thoughts in what measures should be in place to reskill or upskill the workforce? Because when you listen to McKinsey or the IMF and other places, they talk about 40 to 60% job displacement, especially white collar jobs. Thoughts on that?
Yeah, it's going to be a problem for sure, at least in the short term. I think what is going to happen is we will see a lot of people being either reskilled or upskilled to go into a different place, either in the same company or maybe move to a different company and adapt to the circumstances. As you said, there are some aspects of the workforce, and not just in the telco world, that will be affected, we have to be honest. But that doesn't mean that people will be out of jobs. I think there is a lot of things to be done even in advance. And I could mention a few efforts that Telefonica is doing for that matter. One is for Telefonica employees, there's this AI power tool called SkillBank that Telefonica launched a couple of years ago and allows or helps people to reskill. And this way you can move around in a company if you see something interesting and you would like to try it. Even our own CEO has been elected chairman of this jobs and impact committee in the European area. Telefonica is actually investing, I think, up to 100 million euros in these 2 or 3 years until this year, build a hub, an innovation and talent hub. And it's committed to train up to 100,000 people per year with new digital skills. And I mentioned that because I know it's not necessarily AI specific, but we should keep in mind that AI is just one of the technologies that is yes. to disturb the workforce. And therefore, we need to start looking at this problem in a more holistic fashion. And then there is internal university in Telefonica called Universidad that allows this online or hybrid physical kind of learning. There is the so-called Campus 42, which is not Telefonica initiative. It's a worldwide kind of system with campuses around the world. Telefonica is helping in the Spanish region for campuses. And this allows this kind of like peer-to-peer learning. And anybody can come. You don't need to have any qualifications or degrees or whatever. You just come in. You do this hands-on learning with another, let's say, buddy. And you learn or relearn, or you upskill, or you change the way that you think. And these are just some ideas, right? I think that there is more like that need to be done across the world for basically the regular person to start thinking that there are ways, there are options. We just need to start thinking a bit differently for that matter.
Yeah, I'm so glad to hear that already you have initiatives in Telefonica about reskilling and upskilling, because displacement is going to happen just like with every major advancement in technology, but we hope it'll lead to better opportunities. But I'm glad to see what you're doing. Now, Nicholas, telecommunications is also evolving and growing very rapidly. Now, there are emerging technologies like 6G coming up. What role do you think AI is going to play in shaping the future of telecommunications and technologies like 6G and others?
Yeah, that's very interesting. Telefónica is actually already investing a lot of R&D effort to study, understand what 6G may look like, because I have news for everyone. 6G is not there yet, right? We are still discussing what 6G may look like. We have some understanding of what this may be. There are some reports that talk about the bandwidth or the speed with which we will be connecting with, the density of devices, and how easy it's going to be to locate each device in time and space. But anyway, the point is that Telefónica is investing a lot of time into that. My team, actually, we're involved in several R&D projects, either nationally funded from Spain or from the Commission, in order to exactly understand what are the technological advancements that need to be done and what type of performances we are expected to do. And you may have guessed it, there's going to be AI everywhere in these things. So we're talking about intelligent surfaces. We're talking about networks and smart homes and smart factories, and everything will be customizable. You will think of, for example, the network as a kind of like a living type of organization that tries to shift around resources. All these things need automation, right? And you need to have a way to detect when there are problems, when there are more needs. So you bring in resources and so on. And for all these reasons, Telefónica is investing in these, let's say, future type of technologies in order to make sure that we catch up with the need, the market need. Yeah, I think this could sum up, at least in general. I can also mention a few more things, like, for example, edge computing and IoT. We are investing a lot of time research from the research point of view on understanding how to move computation between cloud and edge. It's going to be, in my opinion, a fundamental way of operating when it comes to in the next 5 to 10 years. Not everything is going to be happening in the cloud as it was happening in the last decade. We're going to have a lot of things done at the edge, or even at the user devices, or even further at IoT devices, which are not necessarily owned by anybody, but they are sensors, they are smart lights, fridges, etc. And then there is customer experience. If you think in that angle, I mentioned in the beginning, these chatbots, I think this will become even more and more of a fine-tuned kind of technology that will allow people to become more immersed in the technology. There is, for example, metaverse and augmented reality and virtual reality. So there are all these, let's say, XR kind of concepts that also Telefónica is investing. Last year in the Mobile World Congress here in Barcelona, we had a really cool kind of metaverse type of demo where somebody could enter and start manipulating things in real time in different places. And yeah, I think we will see a lot of TVD in these emerging technologies, and Telefónica is part of a lot of them, in my opinion.
Wow. I'm barely getting used to 5G. We are talking about 6G, metaverse, edge, quantum, my God. And AI, as you said, is going to play a very critical foundational role here. Nicholas, finally, how can your industry and regulators work together to educate the public about the benefits and the risks of AI in telecommunications? Because generally, most people really don't know much about AI in telecommunications, the benefits. You talked already about the customer service, the chatbots, maybe even the language. Is there anything that you and the regulators can do to educate the public?
Yeah, that's an important question. In fact, I think there is more to be done. So it's always a lockstep process. With AI, I think we had a little bit of an acceleration of things, but the last year, AI or ChatGPT has become a household name, and it would not have happened without the technologies that fast. So for that reason alone, I think there was this big outcry around the world this accelerated more the effort from regulators, from different public bodies and so on. I think there's more public awareness campaigns that need to be done to inform people of what are the benefits of AI, of course, as well as the risks of using, because we have seen a lot of tools that came out that allow you to create deepfake videos and audios. And with all the election kind of happening in the US and around the world, I think it's important for people to be aware of, educated around these problems. And at the same time, it's like a feedback kind of loop, because more people being informed and aware of the issues and the capabilities that this technology can do will require more regulation. And the regulation will allow the industry to operate in a more concrete way. And we will have a little bit more, let's say, guidelines of how things can be played. And then at the same time, I think people can push the boundaries of these guidelines, right? I think the government so far in different countries have provided perhaps some guidelines, but they always try to play it safe. And it's okay, but on the other hand, some technologies have more of an exponential type of growth. This should be followed with an exponential kind of effort in public awareness, in education programs, to tell people what is this about and make sure that there is a better understanding, a better transparency around AI and the potential. That being said, of course, there is a lot of R&D to be done. As I said, Telefonica is investing a lot. Companies that I'm aware of also do that in the telco world and beyond. And I think all these, I mentioned this lockstep, because I think every time that there is this effort to be done, we get to a better place and then we keep going to a step by step. It may be the case that these steps need to become bigger. So maybe we don't have the luxury of time anymore to play it safe. We need to be a bit more aggressive on how we do it. And at the same time, people need to be also a bit more attentive towards these matters. The web, the internet, and now these kind of technologies like AI put different pressure in the society and the human as a species. So we need to be a bit more pushy into what we expect from us as a species and what we can do.
That's very helpful. So the governments need to be more aggressive and the population needs to be more attentive and informed of what's happening in regulations and AI and telecommunications. That's exceptionally helpful, Nicholas. Our audience is global. As I said, regulators here around the world, think tanks, other AI aficionados. Final parting words for them from you?
I haven't thought about the parting words, but yeah, I think as a problem and as a potential of a technology, AI, I said earlier, is kind of like a Pandora box. We always think of Pandora box as a negative kind of first step that is controllable and so on. There is a lot of truth to that, but at the same time, being a technology that we as humans created, I think we can put more effort into understanding and quote unquote control. This doesn't need to stifle the process and the progress of the AI technologies. In fact, can help with some guidelines, it can help accelerate the benefits that we get. And I think when it comes to the regulation, we need to definitely come together as a community. There is a lot of different aspects from different parties, different disciplines. Everybody can bring their own aspect, and we try to solve this quite difficult problem of how do you make sure you get the win situation, the best benefits from AI without the potential harms that it can bring.
Win-win situation without negatives and a good Pandora's box. Nicholas, thank you so much. This has been so helpful getting a telecommunication standpoint, because most people really use this for everything now, whether ChatGPT, Bard, or Gemini, or whatever else. Your insight has been exceptionally helpful. Thank you so much for being with us today, Nicholas.
Thank you, Sanjay, for the invitation, and it was a pleasure.
Thank you.
Thanks for tuning in to the Regulating AI Innovate Responsibly podcast. You'll find links in the show notes to any resources mentioned on the show. If you're enjoying our podcast, please subscribe so you'll never miss an episode, and leave us a 5-star review.